Ovens, give them a house, give them food, help them, help their children.
Give the Nicaraguan
stop the crime rates.
Well, we've had a bunch of liberal guests who do not want to send in aid at all.
I listen to you. Let me just finish.
Yeah, part of your job is to listen to me.
Okay, so here's the deal. Here's what's not going to happen today. We're not going to do this. Everybody gets a conversation piece. Everybody gets to say their piece. And we don't need to comment if we don't like what we're hearing. Just let folks talk. Yeah. So finish what you're saying.
I forgot what it was, man.
All right.
The only show that you can stow safely in the overhead compartment. Our top story tonight, under pressure, supposedly, from left-wing journalists and activists, but I repeat myself, Amazon is purging authors from its store. This is according to Breitbart, including a book co-authored by English Islam critic and independent commentator and controversialist Tommy Robinson.
Right?
Who is that? What's his name again?
Tony Robbins.
If I put it in bold, we should have the real picture.
All right. Yeah, sorry. I had another one backed up for it.
Who is the other? What is that?
It's Tim Robbins.
That's better. Tommy Robinson, I get a tweet about once a week saying that he looks like me. I don't really see it.
I'll have to look because I never actually looked at a picture of him.
Look, find a picture and see if you think he looks like me. But this is actually very important stuff. Amazon has been the dominant market player in book sales, and for accounting for nearly 50% of physical books, 83% of ebook sales, and it has the power to effectively cut an author off from the vast majority of the books market. I'm speaking from experience. Dear Reader is only available on Amazon, and Like just a flash of Tommy Robinson. Now, they started this round of purges by targeting white nationalists. In February, they banned a bunch of books from Jared Taylor, who I interviewed for my forthcoming book, and a book called The White Nationalist Manifesto by Greg Johnson.
I'm looking at a slew of the pictures, and I definitely see it.
Put up a bunch. Rotate through them for the fans. Now, this also follows a ban on Holocaust revision books in 2017, as well as a purge of books by Roosh last year. I covered that on this show as well. And like with financial blacklisting, a censorship spree that starts by targeting... Okay, there I see it. That starts by targeting extreme ideas quickly moves to censorship of mainstream ones. It's going to be like, what? You want there to be child pornography books in the store? No. And by tomorrow, it's like, well, we can't have books by the president. I mean, he puts children in cages. In early March, they banned a book called Muhammad's Quran, Why Muslims Kill from Islam, by Tommy. It was a chronological Quran and critique of the Islamic faith. I don't see it there. The book is a chronological reordering of the Islamic Quran, followed by commentary by Robinson and his co-author, Peter McLaughlin. Amazon did not return Breitbart's News request for an explanation of why that book was banned. And in 2010, not that long ago, is that lower third accurate? They refused to take down a book defending pedophilia on First Amendment grounds. Amazon believes it is censorship to not sell certain books simply because we or others believe their message is objectionable. This is what an Amazon rep told CNBC at the time. They said Amazon does not support or promote hatred or criminal acts. However, we do support the right of every individual to make their own purchasing decisions. By the way, I did read, I don't know if they're referring to that book, there's a book I read called Greek Love, which is a defense of pedophilia, and it is, I highly encourage people to read it, because when people start defending these things, you want to know what their arguments are, where they're coming from, and a lot of what these types do, and this is something the Soviets did, they'll take extremely disturbing ideas, package them in kind of palatable, unobjectionable ways and use that to get the foot in the door. And you're only going to be picking up the foot in the door, you know, at a certain point. Then you're like, wait, wait, wait. And this is how they get through and mainstream and normalize certain disturbing things. So it's a lot of these arguments that these types use are being distributed like Johnny Appleseed in our culture, and people don't even realize it. So, you know, with a lot of this stuff, it's always good to go to the source and see what their code words are. And I'm speaking, as a Jewish person. Public and media outcry was not enough at the time to pressure Amazon into watering down its commitment to content neutrality when it came to that pro-pedophile book. But now, see, my condolences to Peter. He's one of the producers. His father passed away. And we have Eric filling in. And this teleprompter is not intuitive. And they're like, oh, it'll be fine. It's fine for them. It's not fine for me because I don't know what to do. I don't have my sick burns. I don't have any. That's a good picture, Tommy.
The program has actually froze.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine. So we have a...
We're back.
Oh. It now takes only the slightest pressure for the tech giant to ban right-wing critiques of religion. But before that, Amazon had watered down its commitment to, quote, the right of every individual to make their own purchasing decisions, unquote. In 2015, it banned the sale of all merchandise depicting the Confederate flag. I was part of this debate on Red Eye with Andy Levy. It got pretty heated. Amazon doesn't seem to have a problem with extremist or destructive books in general. Two of the most destructive books in history, Mein Kampf, which is Hitler's book about the Berlin Wall, and the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels are available for purchase, as well as books by Louis Farrakhan. As Alan puts it, the author of this piece, Alan Bakari, it seems that racial hatred isn't subject to a blanket ban on Amazon either. And Amazon has abandoned its previous commitment to carry all books, no matter how controversial, and it's unclear what consistent principle, if any, the company now follows. And this is the other thing. When it comes to Facebook, Twitter, all these organizations, it's not we're going to ban X. It's that they never say what X is. It's very, very arbitrary. It's ex post facto. It's people we like versus people we don't like. And that is the problem, the lack of transparency and objectivity. If Amazon wanted to say, we will only sell books that are appropriate for people who are 10 years and up, so that it's really got to be safe, no one would have an issue with this. It's a business decision that makes perfect sense. If we have a toy store that says everything in this toy, you know, can't have any even remote sexual content, okay, that's great. That's not what they're doing. So there's a video that went viral Friday, or over the weekend, excuse me, from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And this is really funny. This is her addressing an audience of black people. And for some reason, something about her delivery seemed to be a bit different. Maybe I would call it off color or on color. I'll let you decide. Let's play this clip.
This is what organizing looks like. This is what building power looks like. This is what changing the country looks like. It's when we choose to show up and occupy the room and talk about the things that matter most, talking about our future. You know, Reverend, you bring up a funny anecdote, and I'm proud to be a bartender. Ain't nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with working retail, folding clothes for other people to buy.
Yeah, that's what you people do.
There's nothing wrong with preparing the food that your neighbors will eat. There is nothing wrong with driving the buses that take your family to work.
So what's amazing about this, let's break this down, because she has some clapbacks after this because it got really hard on her on Twitter. The idea, I remember when, what's her name, Kelly Osbourne was on The View, and she thought she was really fucking clever, and she was talking about Donald Trump, and she had her little quip ready. I've mentioned this before, I think, I'm sure. And she goes, well, Mr. Trump, if we don't have Mexicans or immigrants, I don't think she said Mexicans, who's going to clean your toilet? And Rosie Perez was on that panel. And can we find this Kelly Osbourne, Rosie Perez? The View. And Rosie immediately goes, you know, you probably shouldn't be saying that. And Rosie wasn't even that mad. You know, Rosie Perez pops up. That's her character and her persona. But she was kind of normal. And Kelly Osbourne was like, oh, shit. Oh, I done goofed. And you're talking to an audience of black people. And to sit there and be like, hey, there's nothing wrong with being maids and folding clothes and bus drivers and, someone who wipes down tables, cotton picking. There's nothing wrong with that. You all should be proud of yourselves. It's like, holy. Let's put it the other way. Let's pretend she was talking to the audience of Jewish people. It could happen. And she says, you should be proud of being doctors and lawyers and a different type of doctor and someone who reads the Talmud, which I don't know what that is, but I think it's degenerate. I mean, the reaction would not be nice. Maybe they would do it in the room because they're fans of hers. People are like, this is pretty fucked up. I mean, anyway, you have the clip? Let's play this clip.
Those racist comments do not help. And if you kick
look at her face.
Every Latino out of this country,
watch her face.
Then who is going to be cleaning your toilet, Donald Trump?
So proud of herself.
Oh, that's, no.
In the sense that, no. You know what I mean? Like, what I'm saying,
there's more jobs to be
in LA. They always,
but
they
don't. Latinos are not only the
no,
only people.
No, I didn't mean it like that. Come on. No, I would never mean it like that.
Okay.
I'm not part of this argument. With,
I think what you're saying is that Trump himself.
I didn't know. I would never. I know. You just did, bitch. You just fucking did. All right, so here's this other dame, and she goes, folks, this is how she responded on Twitter when the freakouts happened, understandably. First of all, like the clapping, I have not told this story in a long time. Can you pull a picture of Barry Williams, who's Greg Brady? Barry Williams came to my college, and he has this routine he does. He goes from school to school, gives a talk, and as part of, I'm sure it's a set talk. It was very entertaining. And as part of his talk, he busts out his Johnny Bravo character from the Brady Bunch. He's got the glasses, he got the fringe vest, and he talked about in his book or somewhere, I don't remember where, like he took vocal lessons, he wanted to become a better vocalist, and he sings a song. It's nice. I really enjoyed that evening because, you know, he gave the audience exactly what it wanted, and he owned being Greg Brady. You got a picture of Greg, right? Yeah. So, yeah, he came to my school. Can you get a picture of him when he's older? Like a contemporary one. So he comes to my school, and he goes, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to teach everyone how to dance like a Brady. Great. Now, Bucknell is in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, and for some reason, or maybe this is just a perception thing, it seemed like per capita there were a lot of mentally disabled people. And I don't mean like Down syndrome. I mean like there's something not right there, and that's fine. No one's casting any judgment. If I would make fun of everyone who's mentally disabled, I'd have no audience, am I right? Or producers. So what they had to do is they got... That's true. Oh, look. Perfect lower third. So he got like a bunch of people from the audience, and he taught them this Brady Bunch dance. Okay? You could go back to me because they've got to see this. So I wasn't on the stage, but it was a very simple dance. It's like clap, turn, clap. Clap, turn, you know, and it's like this. It's just back and forth. You're turning the side, clap, pause, front, clap, pause. You know, it was something like that, very simple. You're shaking your hands, and basically you have three rows of people while he's singing. It was a whole fucking nice thing. Well, in the front row was this girl. She must have been 20, let's say. You know, it's hard to tell when people are mentally disabled because they dress them like children. And while everyone in unison is going like this, she's playing catch-up, kind of like the teleprompter. And so she's like, and then she's like, and she didn't even know how to clap. She's like, and I'm watching this. And I'm like, oh my God, it was absolutely hilarious. How the fuck can you be a woman of color and not know how to clap on cue? What was that? That she was, can we play the beginning of this clip again? She's not matching the beat to what she was saying. Good fucking Lord. This girl is whiter than the ideal society.
This is what building power looks like. This is what changing the country looks like.
What is she doing?
It's when we choose to show up and occupy the room and talk about the things that matter most.
She stops clapping. Yeah, so it's like she's trying to use the emoji, but she's not using it right. So here's what she said in response. Folks talking about my voice. Folks talking about Richard Voss can step right off. Women's March and Kavanaugh speech, same. Any kid who grew up in a distinct linguistic culture and had to learn to navigate class enviros at school/work knows what's up. So my Spanish is the same way. These conspiracy mills are garbage emoji. Conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. Playing your clip and saying, why are you talking in a weird accent to black people and talking about how they're maids is a conspiracy. She goes, as much as the right wants to distort and deflect, I am from the Bronx. I act and talk like it, especially when I'm fired up and especially when I'm home. It is so hurtful to see how every aspect of my life is weaponized against me, yet somehow assert as false at the same time. Okay, here's the thing. Bitch, I'm from Brooklyn. Now, in her defense, the Bronx is the hipster borough, because you've probably never been there. I'm not saying I'm some kind of... I'm not Marissa Tomei in a different world. I'm not like the white guy with black people, although I have been that. It's really, really fun to do. If you actually are around people of color all your life, you don't change your voice and start clapping in their fucking face, first of all. Number one, if she's talking about linguistic subcultures, speaking as someone for whom English is a second language and had to go to school to speak Hebrew and spoke Russian at home, there is a difference between you speak casually and more street with your friends and family, and then in the office, you talk like a newscaster. That is a real phenomenon. That's often described as talking white, whatever. That's not the reverse, that you talk educated and the Queen's English in a professional context, and as soon as you see those dark faces, it's fucking Amos and Andy up in here. That's not what you're doing. She goes, then hours later, she was still angry. She goes, next time you're told straight hair is unprofessional. Oh, yeah, because this was about her hair. When people are like, why are you talking to these people as if they're all bus drivers and janitors? Oh, is this about my fucking hair? Okay, Kathy Newman, who also has curly hair. Next time you're told straight hair is unprofessional. Straight hair is unprofessional? Wait. No, straight hair is professional, you stupid bitch. Next time you're told curly hair is unprofessional. Oh, she's so fucking dumb. And that speaking like your parents do is uneducated. If you really think her parents, I don't know what her parents are like, what nationality, ethnicity. You think that when they talk to black people, they're clapping their retardedly in their face? I don't. I've never met them, but I don't. Then you could complain about code switching. Code switching is a tool communities learn when they're told their voice, appearance, and mannerisms are unprofessional. Again, does that look like someone becoming more professional? Code switching is referenced a lot in pop culture. That's true. It was a big element in a major film last year. Sorry to bother you. Oh, okay. Go. Instead of saying read a book, she says watch a movie. If you're confused about how code switching is a cultural reality, people of color and communities read about it. Oh, she did say read a book. It doesn't have to be a book, I guess. We see the perceived boosts. What? Costs. Damn. We see the perceived costs to not code switching all the time. Can't tell you how many young people in our community don't have the confidence they should because they didn't grow up learning secondary speech. Their talents get stifled by respectability despite enormous gifts. That's very fair. That is very fair. When you have a poor person who's coming from an ethnic background and they interview in a WASPy environment, they are going to be often discriminated against on a subconscious level. Same thing with people who have accents. Like, it's very weird and counterintuitive. It's like, wait a minute. Like, Melania Trump, they make fun of her with her accent. Bitch speaks 6 languages. So let's suppose her English is not that good. So she speaks 5.5. So it's and you hear, like, someone from another country. It's like, wait a minute. If they're a doctor trying to speak English in not their native language, you have to be really smart to be able to think in medical terms and then translate those into a foreign language. That's actually an advantage in terms of how good your brain is. Now, I'm not talking about the average person. I'm talking about specialties, and it fucks with them. She goes, the good news is that we can improve this easily with honest reflection. For example, are certain hairstyles discouraged in your workplace? Well, I mean, maybe some people in that audience could braid her hair for her, because that was largely what the population was made of, apparently. Can you think of someone who didn't advance because of how they spoke? Examine what's deemed unprofessional around you and adapt it to 2019. Hey, remember all those articles about how Donald Trump speaks like an elementary school kid and his vocabulary is like a 10-year-old? Remember all those articles? I guess that's what she's citing. Here's the other thing. If what she's saying is true, and if what she's saying is true, and this is something that we don't understand because we haven't grown up, you know, Jenny from the block like she has, we can be sure that she's going to continue to do this in the future, right? Because there's nothing wrong with it. She's being judged not only unfairly, but by people who don't know what they're talking about. So I'm sure we can look forward to her doing this in the future. And that will be the proof that this isn't her covering her ass, but that she's coming from a place of truth and speaking truth to power. Speaking of truth to power, shit got real in Canada. Is that code switching? For Justin Trudeau. Last week, he was speaking to a group of young women in the House of Commons. That's their version of the Senate. And more than 40 of them stood up and turned their backs to him. Ouch. He was addressing delegates from the Daughters of the Vote, which is a university age group, who were visiting Ottawa from across Canada to learn more about the country's paramilitary democracy. It says parliamentary, but I thought paramilitary would be funnier. As one of the delegates later told reporters, the protest was all about his banishment from caucus this week of two female Liberal members of parliament. He's the head of the Liberal Party. Both were also high-profile cabinet ministers and were accused and are accusing him of judicial interference. This stuff is very, very serious, and I'll get to it in a second. Now, both the former Attorney General Jody Wilson-Raybould, that's her, and the Health Minister Jane Philpott resigned from his cabinet over the simmering SNC-Lawin scandal. Now, Wilson here has emphatically insisted that Trudeau was pressuring her to defer bribery and fraud charges in a criminal prosecution against the Quebec contractor. And a third Liberal member of parliament has left the Liberal caucus after she says Trudeau bullied her because she has chosen not to seek re-election in the coming 2019 vote. Now, Canada's First Nations, those are the formerly known as Eskimos, but you're not allowed to say that north of the border, are also angry with Trudeau because Wilson-Raybould was the first Aboriginal to occupy the twin positions of Canadian Attorney General and Justice Minister. Now, here's where it's really interesting. She taped at least one key conversation with his government's top bureaucrat, which is evidence that backs up her testimony that she was pressured to judicially interfere, which is a felony, I believe, on behalf of Quebec contractor SNC-Lavalin. She was speaking to Privy Council clerk Michael Wernick, who was passing on Trudeau's instructions on how the Attorney General could have fraud and bribery charges against the firm deferred. So he was telling her, the Attorney General, to defer these fraud and bribery charges. Now, this has become a major scandal. She resigned, as I covered in the show, from the cabinet after she was shuffled out of the justice portfolio and given veteran affairs instead. Now, the former Attorney General and Minister of Justice submitted the recording to the House of Commons Justice Committee last week, and it was released on Friday. Wilson-Raybould's comment words confirm what she told the committee in testimony in February. She warned Wernick on several occasions that any intervention on her part to protect the firm would amount to political interference. She told him in the recording, "This is not a great place for me to be in. But what I am confident of is that I have given the Prime Minister my best advice to protect him and to protect the constitutional principle of prosecutorial independence." Now, Wernick said that she didn't understand his determination to assist the contractor. He said, "All right, but I'm worried about a collision then because he is pretty firm about this. I just saw him a few hours ago, and this is really important to him." This is... holy shit, this is really, really bad. Now, she discussed the issue, they're discussing the issue of SNC-Lavalin deserving special attention because it provides significant employment. She said, "This goes far beyond saving jobs. This is about the integrity of the Prime Minister and interference. There's no way that anybody would interpret this as anything but interference if I were to step down. It doesn't matter how I would look. The biggest problem is what it would look like down the road for the government." Now, Wernick told her that he was a bit worried. She goes, "A bit worried about what?" He says that she's at loggerheads with the prime minister. He explained, I'm trying to protect the prime minister from political interference. No, she said this. This is her. Sorry. Back to her. I'm trying to protect the prime minister from political interference, perceived or otherwise. And he said, I have to report back, meaning to Trudeau. And Trudeau's office claimed that he was not briefed on this conversation. They said the prime minister was not briefed by the clerk on his conversation with Jody Wilson-Raybould, and we were unaware of the full contents of this recording before today. This according to a statement. And the bad news continues for him as a poll this week had his approval rating among Canadians down to 40%. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the recent Canadian polls, the Conservative Party, who had lost in a huge landslide in 2015, are clearly ahead of the Liberals. And the reason they had a big majority of the Liberals two elections ago, there was this big scandal. The Liberals went to like third place, which had never happened before. So this is going to be really, really funny as the election hits later this year, because bitch has receipts. That is no joke. We got two more things to get through. I think we should hold on a second. I think we should do that Bernie video. So here I'm gonna sing the praise of Bernie Sanders for a second. One of the things you can't deny about Bernie Sanders is that for a very long time, and still, he wasn't a Democrat. He was an independent. He's like, my views are not the same as the Democratic Party. It would not be fair for me to be a member, join the party that I'm not a member of. Great. Now the pressure, he's running Democratic primary, is to run towards the left and get those votes, and then you're going to have a problem because then you have to run towards the center for the general. And he has a long record of not being for open borders, for being a nationalist economically and in other ways. And you would think now that the left has gotten, this has been one of their big issues and kind of opening up, loosening immigration, that he would be for this. And he is being consistent to his decade-long record. So let's watch this audio clip.
It's with opening the borders, such as healthcare, medical care, and...
Who do you think is suggesting opening the borders?
Well, that you're an activist for opening for...
No, I'm not. I'm afraid you may be getting your information wrong. That is not my view.
Okay, I apologize. Thank you. Okay.
I think what we need is comprehensive immigration reform. That is not simply... You're quite right. If your point is you open the borders, my God... You know, there's a lot of poverty in this world, and you're going to have people from all over the world. And I don't think that's something that we can do at this point. Can't do it. So that is not my position.
So it's really interesting because that's basically like the many ways the conservative position. Now, and also calling for comprehensive immigration reform is a very great phrase that means absolutely nothing. It could mean anything you want it to. For example, closing down the borders would be a comprehensive immigration reform. Having it that you can come here but you can never vote would easily be considered comprehensive immigration reform. Having more immigration but eliminating birthright citizenship would be comprehensive immigration reform. Anytime you have two things or more happening at once, you can easily say that's comprehensive immigration reform. Notice that he didn't get into what he meant by comprehensive immigration reform. He didn't even hit those talking point punchlines, which is like, oh, we have to eliminate ICE. You know, it's unconscionable. It's holding out the border. He was very matter of fact. He's just like, all right, I'm not for opening the borders. He didn't even say we need more immigration. He didn't even say the stupid catchphrase, immigration's good. I'm saying the stupid not because I disagree, but because they're just, you know, things people say without thinking about them for at all, just, you know, hackneyed political expression. So this is going to be really interesting because someone who's not going to be doing well in the polls is going to clearly in those debates take this and attack him with it during those debates. This is a very low-hanging fruit. And I think he has enough clout that he'll be very good at smacking them down because he's obviously thought this through and he'll be able to be coherent, clear, and articulate about it. And they're just going to look like they're taking a cheap political shot. And I, for one, can't wait. So tomorrow, we've got some major meme news and Brexit and Theresa May's cracking down on free speech in the UK. But until then, I will wish you all nothing but sweet dreams.
You look really familiar. You must have a television.